we're looking more deeply at women in the church on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Historian Beth Ellison Barr started speaking out in 2017. This series of blog posts on disrupting Christian patriarchy was after her husband was fired from his job as a youth pastor. He had asked church elders to reconsider their position on women. Barr, she grew up in the Southern Baptist Church and suddenly realized how far women's subordination had gone, not even allowing a woman to teach youth Sunday school. Are you in the evangelical or Catholic faith? What do you see as the role of women in ministry? 800-642-1234. Beth Ellison Barr is an associate dean for professional development and a professor of history at the Baylor University Graduate School. Her new book is called The Making of Biblical Womanhood, How the Subjugation of Women Became Gospel Truth. Beth, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, growing up in the Southern Baptist Church, marrying a Southern Baptist pastor, what were you taught was the role of women to have in the church, family, and society as you grew up?
Women's role was in the background. And that was something that I began to learn, especially in the late 90s and the early 2000s, as these ideas became more entrenched within evangelical churches, that while women could teach, it was mostly confined to children and to other women. And while women could sometimes be on the stage, it would mostly be in supporting roles, and that women were really never supposed to be behind the pulpit or teaching in front of men. So women would follow while men would lead.
You joined your church youth group in the late 80s, really at the height of evangelical authors and influencers like Pat Robertson and like James Dobson. What did you hear from these voices?
I remember the first sort of youth event weekend where we were talking about, I think the weekend was actually focused on relationships in the future. And it began to talk about women and men's roles in marriage. And it's the first time that I heard very clearly that women were called to be under the leadership of their husbands, and that women were always supposed to be, you know, the supporting role within the home and within the church as well. And so even though I had heard some of those ideas kind of in the background, especially through the radio show of James Dobson, that was the first time, and I was early high school when I heard that clearly articulated by my youth leaders.
But there you went on a path toward the PhD and got the PhD, and now, you know, advising students, and some, you know, have come up to you in the past and said, how did you make this difficult choice? How did you do that? You know, what were these teachings doing to your career ambitions?
So I think this is one of the ironies. This type of teaching about male headship and female submission in many ways depends upon the men who you marry and who your father is and who the church pastor is. And so even though I was begun to be taught these complementarian ideas, I still had a father who was very supportive of female education. He had three daughters. He grew up in West Texas, and he saw the importance of education. And so he was very committed, and my mother too, to us getting a full education. And so graduate school was always something that was encouraged within my household. And when I married my husband, although he too grew up in complementarian circles, his mother was also very much an advocate of women's education. Her mother had gotten divorced when she was a child, and she had seen the importance of her mom as a single mom being able to raise the family. So she also promoted women's education. So I had both my husband and my family supporting me into education. However, a lot of the women that I now work with, my students that I have at Baylor, they have grown up in families that have been much more entrenched within these complementarian ideas. And many of them do come into college with the mindset that their goal is to get married, that their goal is to have a job that supports their husband, that their goal is to do something only if it doesn't interfere with their God-given role as being a wife and a mother. And so I think the students that have come after me have a much more difficult, you know, in some ways, they have more barriers to them, to education, than I did.
We're going to unpack complementarianism in just a moment, but I want to reintroduce you. Beth Allison Barr, author of The Making of Biblical Womanhood. She's a medieval history professor at Baylor University. Your thoughts on gender roles in the church, 800-642-1234. Charlie is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie. Hi, Charlie. Are you there?
Yes.
Good morning.
My comment was about the church, and that one of the first controversies involving the church was the necessity of circumcision to be part of the church. And the new church, after the ascension, they changed that requirement. So I think a lot of things that are long-standing, traditional, can change at any time, especially as the church changes. We know that women are equal to men. They should be equal in all participation. It's a changing of mores. It's a changing of times. The church should change, and that's part of also the church history, the ability to change. Thank you.
Charlie, thank you. Beth heard a lot of change in that. What do you make?
Yes, no, I agree with him. Although I have to say that a lot of the complaints by more conservative churches is that women's leading and teaching and preaching is actually a result of modern feminism. And that was one of the core tenets that I challenged within the Making of Biblical Womanhood, that the church has a long history of women leading, teaching, and preaching. So while I do think that the church, and we clearly have evidence of this, even in the New Testament, that the church does change, that there are only a few things that are core to what it means to be a Christian, and a lot of other things are traditions. So we always need to be attentive to what's core and what's tradition. But at the same time, it is not really a change to allow women to teach, preach, and lead in the church, because women have always done this throughout history.
Some Christians might view feminism as a secular ideal, and therefore it would be corrupt. How much of a barrier is that to advocating for women's rights within the church?
It is a significant barrier. Very recently, I put out on social media a question where I simply just asked why Christian women who advocated for equality for women also did not like the word feminism or the word womanism. And much of the response that I got was that they saw it as a secular influence. They saw it as a non-Christian influence. They saw it as a dangerous influence to the church. So even if they were supportive of women being able to work outside the home, women being able to teach and preach in church, they would not identify with the feminist movement, which is simply recognizing that women are equal to men and that we need to challenge structures within our society that keep women from having that equality with men. So it shows how clearly entrenched in modern Christianity is this, sort of this reversion or this fear of feminism. And that is definitely a barrier for women today.
Looking more at this terminology, the Southern Baptist Convention, the head of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, Russell Moore, he had declared patriarchy a better word for the conservative Christian gender hierarchy than complementarianism. Can you kind of unpack for us this word, complementarianism, and how it came to be, how it's defined?
Yes, complementarianism is a very recent manifestation of Christian patriarchy. It's essentially, same song, different verse. Complementarianism did not emerge until the late 1980s, and it emerged among a group of men who were mostly the founders of the Council for Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. Many of them are with the Gospel Coalition today, and so the influence of folk like John Piper and Wayne Grudem, and Denny Burke, etc. So they wanted a word that people would respond better to than patriarchy, because patriarchy was seen by many of them as not being a very friendly word. And so they wanted a word that defined what they believed to be the divinely created differences between men and women that was also more palatable to modern Christians. And so they came up with the word complementarianism. And it's an interesting word. It does have earlier history roots. We saw it actually in the 17th century with the Scientific Revolution, where it began to be argued that because women's brains and bodies were smaller than men, and because women were created for childbearing, that clearly was their job. And so they argued that women's roles complemented men's roles. Women were the followers and the caretakers of the home, and men were the leaders and the public figures. So this is sort of an old word that was revived in the 1980s to come up with a better way to say patriarchy. And so Russell Moore, who is a complicated figure and has done a lot of good things for the church, but he is being honest in this article where he simply says, look, complementarianism is patriarchy. And he, at the time that he wrote that article in 2006, he clearly believed that patriarchy was something that was instituted by God.
Baylor University history professor Beth Allison Barr's book, it's called The Making of Biblical Womanhood. What do preachers say at your church about what women can and can't do? How do you feel about complementarianism, that women and men are assigned very different roles at home and at church, and women should submit? What about women behind the pulpit? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Beth Allison Barr here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring patriarchy in the church, tracing where it comes from that women can't be leaders. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Historian Beth Allison Barr, she writes, biblical womanhood teaches that women are designed by God to be different from men and submissive to masculine authority. And evangelicals have moved closer to make this the gospel truth. How do you view women's leadership in Christianity? What scripture can you point to that helps illustrate your point? What do you make of the rigid gender roles? 800-642-1234. Beth Allison Barr with us for the hour. Getting more deeply into your life, Beth, and your husband's firing from his job as a youth pastor nearly now 5 years ago, what was the turning point there for you and the church?
It was several turning points, culminating finally in the fall of 2016. But it was, sort of our ministry has emerged alongside this hardening of gender roles in the evangelical church. And it is very easy to trace this hardening of gender roles from the late 80s through the, really the 2000s. So what we began to witness was women being pushed out of places in our church where they had been visible in the past. We saw fewer women on the stage. We saw fewer women leading worship. We stopped seeing women pray in church. And this was something that happened slowly over time. At the same time, however, we were mostly within youth ministry, and youth ministry can provide a really great sort of space and bubble in many churches. So we were able to shelter many of the students in our youth ministry from some of these trends that are going on in our church. And we also were able to shelter ourselves a little bit. So it really wasn't until we began to face this challenge of needing to have a Sunday school teacher. And I filled in for a while as a temporary Sunday school teacher, but I wasn't allowed to call myself a Sunday school teacher, and I wasn't allowed to teach my own lessons. I had to only follow the questions that were given from the sermon from the week before. And so I got tired of this, and it was very frustrating. And so I eventually said I couldn't do it anymore, and we needed to find someone else. And it was at this point that we had a team, a man in our church and a woman in our church, who said that they would be happy to co-teach it together. And that was the triggering event. We asked for that to happen. We actually really thought the church would let us do this, and were very surprised when we were told that we could not do it. And that was the triggering factor when we realized that we simply could no longer support, even pretend to support these structures within our church.
What were the repercussions? I mean, for you, you started writing and writing a lot. Things were just coming out of you. It seemed like just flowing out from these years.
Yes.
What was that like?
It was very hard. We were, the repercussions, of course, were within 3 weeks of us challenging that my husband was fired. And it was very traumatic. It was very traumatic because we also couldn't tell anyone what really was going on. And part of that was because we were in trauma. And part of that was also because we had been told that our severance pay was dependent upon us essentially being quiet, which was a really hard choice for us to make. At the same time, though, we didn't really want to speak out in anger. So we just kind of had to recover. So as soon as we got out of the church and we got out from under that severance pay, I think everything that had been inside of me just really started to come out. I had realized this whole experience had shown me so well that the teachings on women were simply not rooted in the Bible, that they were things that we carried to the Bible, and that they hurt real women. They hurt the kids in our youth group. They hurt the women in my life. They had hurt me. And so I realized that I simply couldn't allow this to stand anymore. I started a blog series on Paul, on reconsidering Paul. And that led to a blog series on disrupting Christian patriarchy. And it was at that point that I then was asked to think about doing a book. So
Beth Allison Barr is with us, and that book is The Making of Biblical Womanhood, getting your insights on the gender roles in the church. What is happening in your spiritual community? 800-642-1234. Mark now in Wauwatosa. Hi, Mark. What is your situation?
Well, I attend a church now that is led by a woman. She's a woman leader and a preacher in our church, and that's Assembly of God. And I just was wondering if the Foursquare Gospel and the Assembly of God background promoted women more than, say, you know, the Southern Baptist tradition.
Mm. Your thoughts there, Beth?
Yes, there are indeed. The Foursquare tradition has a very strong history of women in leadership and women preaching. So I think that, and part of this is because the tradition in the Foursquare and in the Assemblies of God and in Pentecostal churches is this emphasis on the Holy Spirit and this emphasis on prophecy. And women are often given voices and allowed, because there is very clear teachings in the New Testament and in the Old Testament that women held the role of prophecy. Now, there's different understandings of what that role actually means. Mm. But in churches that are more receptive of this idea of women as prophets, they are also more receptive of women in leadership. So we often do find women preaching, teaching, and leading within these churches because their history has very clearly always allowed women to do these things. I will tell you, however, that in some of these churches within the past 20, 30 years, there has been some hardening of gender roles, even within these churches that more traditionally have always supported women in ministry.
You know, what your book did for me, I remember the first time I went to an evangelical Christian wedding and the exchange of vows. And of course, the sickness and in health part was there, but there were so many subservient things. And I kept elbowing the person next to me. And the pastor also did some further asides in the ceremony, like really sad humor about when the groom is upset and what the wife should do. It was eye-opening. And I just remember not knowing what to say or do, so I didn't do anything. I just went to the wedding and never looked back. What do you make of the silence and the ceremonial aspect of these things?
That is such a good observation. And it is, as a medieval historian, that was one of the first things that struck me as I began to go back and read through some of these medieval wedding sermons and even looking at the medieval wedding ceremony, which the medieval world was patriarchal. But the emphasis, this evangelical emphasis on women's subordination and how critical it is to the functioning of the household and to the godly protection of the household. I mean, a lot of this does stem from things that we saw in the Bill Gothard movement that some have called fringe. But if you see their widespread influence within evangelicalism, we know that it really isn't fringe. And it was this argument that the leadership of the father would help bring the blessing of God on the family. And so if women would buck that leadership, and if children would buck that leadership, then it would lead to God not blessing that family and bad things happening to that family. So it's this very interesting and very fragile theology. But it did lead to a significant emphasis on male leadership, not just as something that you should do, but as something that God had ordained, and that if you do not follow it, it will hurt your family. And so I think this is, I mean, we have bought this. The evangelical church has bought this hook, line, and sinker. And so women who are in these systems are afraid to speak out. They're afraid that if they believe that they are called to preach, teach, or lead, that there must be something wrong with them because that's against God's commands. If they disagree with their husband, if they think that their husband is doing something that should not be done or leading their family in a different way, that if they question him or challenge him, then that's sin in their own lives, that they are prideful, and that they're not willing to accept their subjugation, their godly subjugation.
We have to pause there with Beth Ellison Barr. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the role of women in the church on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, author and historian Beth Ellison Barr. She grew up Southern Baptist, remained in conservative evangelical churches throughout most of her adult life. But when her youth minister husband dared to ask permission for a woman to teach a high school Sunday school class, they became a danger to what their church professed as gospel truth. Barr writes, "We were dangerous to the gospel of Christ." What do you want to know about the role of women's leadership in Christian history? How does your faith community treat women? 800-642-1234. Beth Ellison Barr's new book is called The Making of Biblical Womanhood, and she's with us for the hour. Let's go to Joanne now in Milwaukee. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning. I wonder if Ms. Barr has read Kate Moore's book, The Woman They Could Not Silence. This was based in an 1860 woman who was put in an insane asylum, partially because at that time women who disagreed with their religious husbands were considered insane. When there's a part in this book that I just read last night where Ms. Barr was talking about when after they were done being in this ministry, she sat down and started to write, and the words just came and came and came. This is exactly what this woman experienced, and I'm wondering if Ms. Barr has read this book.
Joanne, thank you. Beth?
I have not read that book, but what I think Joanne is seeing is that these experiences that women have had are not unique, that there is a long history of women recognizing the problems of silencing them within churches, that women recognize that God is calling them to preach, teach, and lead in the same ways as men, and women speak out against, this is not something new, women standing up and saying that we are called to preach, teach, and lead. This is something that women have been doing throughout church history.
The Apostle Paul, the most prolific writer in the Bible, you know, Christians in the past may have used Paul to exclude women from leadership. And your students, I was smiling, they hate Paul, but you ask this question, what if we've been reading Paul wrong? What do you see?
I think that we have not been reading Paul within his context. And this is something that modern American Christians have gotten very lazy about. We can sort of, correlate this. We also don't want to learn other people's languages, and we want to put everything within American context. And this keeps us from understanding the Bible for what it was, that it is a product of a very different world from ours. And even though it teaches us about the same gospel and the same Jesus, that we have to understand the world in which it was produced is not like ours. And so if we want to understand what Paul is really saying, we have to put him within that context of the first century world. And when we do, what we see is that he cannot be telling women to be silent, because he also is telling women to preach and recognizing them as leaders alongside him. So we have to take Paul in his entirety and not limit our understanding of Paul and his emphasis on women to just a handful of verses.
You also write about a female apostle, Junia. What do you know about her?
Junia is a fascinating story. Really, until the early modern world, she was almost universally recognized as female. Nobody tried to change her name. Martin Luther actually did because he didn't think a woman could be an apostle, but not very many people followed his lead. So it's really not until the modern era, with the proliferation of modern English Bible translations in the 19th century especially, that we begin to see translators looking at Junia and saying, well, if she is a woman, she can't be an apostle because women can't be an apostle. So either she's not a woman, hence translating her name as Junius, or she's not an apostle. Hence, instead of being outstanding among the apostles, she becomes well known to the apostles. These changes were only made by men for the reason that they did not think a woman could be in this role.
So this is what you mean by women being translated out of the Bible and obscuring that women were leaders in the past, in very early times.
Yes, yes. This is definitely something that we see in our church history lessons, in the way that we preach from the pulpit. We leave women out of the narrative, or we minimize their roles. This is clearly, all you have to do is look at seminary textbooks that are taught in most of the conservative seminaries, and we find that women play very small roles within those texts, and they are almost never mentioned in leadership roles like men.
But in the contrast of history, you know, you bring up ancient Mesopotamia and women being treated as property, Babylonian law allowing husbands to drown their wives for alleged adultery. We are living in a very different world, but you also see that history isn't being valued or shared in the context of how we interpret scripture.
Yes, no, you're exactly right. I think one of the most damning arguments against complementarian structures is that the way that modern American evangelicalism emphasizes women's roles looks exactly like these ancient non-Christian cultures. While we may not say that it's okay for husbands to drown their wives, and certainly we don't say that, there are many churches that do teach. And in fact, there's a very famous video clip of John Piper saying that a woman should endure abuse for a while. If she gets hit, endure being hit or slapped one night, and then she brings it to the church the next day, that she should always remain underneath that authority of her husband. And that's just as appalling as some of these things that we read in these ancient and medieval texts. So patriarchy is consistent in history. Patriarchy damages women. And yet this same patriarchy is what is emphasized as godly.
We have Beth Allison Barr with us, medieval historian at Baylor University, author of the new book, The Making of Biblical Womanhood. Let's go to Gary now in Ripon. Gary, hi.
Yes, good morning. I guess I was just wondering if you belong to an organization and then you come to the realization that you and the organization don't agree, why don't you just go your way and the organization goes its way?
Beth, what do you make of what Gary's saying? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I do think that that is certainly something that people do and people have done. But at the same time, there are also, when we think about Christianity and we think about the church and we think about the way that the church has emphasized women's subordination and emphasized, encouraged the types of relationships that allow women to stay within abusive relationships. We think about the Church Too movement. And we think about all of the abuse that's been pouring out of the Southern Baptist world and the independent Baptist world. And what we realize is that we can't simply turn a blind eye to systems that damage people and to systems that damage the gospel of Christ. So sometimes you have to take a stand.
I want to get to Church Too in just a moment here, but is there documentation? Has the church lost a lot of women?
That's a hard question to answer. There have been a lot of people looking into similar questions. For example, there have been a lot of studies on younger people leaving the church. We see this. We see this with the evangelical crowd, which is a very interesting movement. We see this also with, you know, people leaving denominations, especially, you know, we know the Southern Baptist denomination is shrinking. We know that denominations in general are shrinking. So there are those overarching percentages. We can anecdotally say that there are women who say they are leaving these churches because of these reasons, but we also know a lot of women are staying. And I think the reason for that is because the decision to leave a church is very complicated. And for many women, they are married, they have children, they are in jobs that are connected to these churches. And for them to leave, they would have to leave everything behind, sort of like what happened to my husband and I. And so it's very hard for them to make those choices.
You identify as a white woman, a pastor's wife, and you find that patriarchy operates in the realm of structural racism and systemic oppression. What parallels do you draw there to racism?
Yes, this is something that historian Gerda Lerner recognized in her book, The Creation of Patriarchy. And she wasn't the first, but she articulated it well, where that when we have these types of hierarchies that emphasize patriarchal authority, that we also see the emphasis on racism. And in fact, we know in the New Testament, the household codes that are still used today to emphasize the subordination of women were once used in the 19th century to emphasize slaveholding and to justify slaveholding, that it was, and in fact, we even saw, I hate to bring John Piper up again, but he just wrote a really disturbing article defending Jonathan Edwards, in which he presented slaveholding in this very paternalistic sort of way, and that even suggesting that some cases that this type of slavery and this relationship is okay, that it's good. And this is a same person who also advocates for the subordination of women within the home. And so I strongly believe that one of the reasons that racism is so deeply entrenched within Southern white churches is because racism is still so deeply entrenched. When we teach people that there is something about the way they are born that makes them better than other people, this leads to parallel forms of oppression. So patriarchy, racism, simply cannot be separated.
Beth Allison Barr looks through a historical lens, lays out a case for how being submissive has become required for women in conservative Christian denominations. Her new book takes on Christian patriarchy. Does your church have a woman pastor or minister? What effect has it on your congregation? What roles should women be allowed to do in churches? 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Historian Beth Allison Barr, she connects the dots between complementarianism and patriarchy. It rewards women who play by the rules. That is, she writes, staying silent to ensure a man can stay a church leader. And she writes, century after century, arguments for women's subordination reflects historical circumstances more than the face of God. Beth Allison Barr, a history professor at Baylor, with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's go to Mark now in La Crosse. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. Say, through the years, I've heard a number of discussions like this about the misogyny in the Catholic Church or fundamental Christian faiths, but I don't think I've ever heard a discussion about the misogyny in the Muslim faith, which is far more severe and violent. I think we had a report the other day of Al-Qaeda or the Taliban killing a woman for not wearing a burqa or for not wearing a covering. Sure. So any comment or any perspective or any comparison between the Muslim faith versus some of the fundamental Christian faiths?
Mark, thank you. Beth?
Yes, there are a lot of parallels. This is, in fact, one of my arguments is that patriarchy is not something that is produced by the Bible. It is something produced by human culture. and human history. And so we find similar iterations of it in many different types of religions. I mean, we could also go to India and we could talk about women in India. We could talk about women in Asia, et cetera. And so I think what you have just articulated within Islam is that, yes, there is a very severe form of patriarchy that that damages women, that hurts women, that not only pushes them out of leadership, but also causes that allows physical violence and even the murder of women. But this is not something that's limited to fundamental forms of Islam. It is something you could also find in fundamentalist forms of Christianity, in fundamentalist forms of other religions. And one of the things that we find similar with this fundamentalism is that there is a belief that there are few people who have a pure understanding of their faith, and that pure understanding is usually confined to the men, and that anyone who challenges that are outside and are dangerous. And this often includes women. So I think what you just talked about is evidence of what I've argued in the book, that patriarchy is a part of human history and it has always hurt women. It is not something that is created specifically within Christianity.
Mark, thank you for the call. Paul now is joining us from Delafield. Hi, Paul. What is your church like?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I belong to a large evangelical church in the Milwaukee area. And a number of years ago, we went through a process to decide if it was okay for women to serve in the elder board. And really, in the church structure, the elders are the highest level of authority. And went through a lot of different verses, trying to put things in context. And the church as a whole did decide to allow women to serve in those leadership roles as well as pastoral roles.
How has it been since then, may I ask?
I think it was a good decision, absolutely. I know many, many women in the church who do a lot more than most of the men in the church, and not only in the service, but also in teaching and leadership. So I think it's been fantastic.
Paul, thank you for those observations. Beth, you know, Paul's church has made changes.
Yes, I think that there are many churches that are beginning to see this. I mean, if you look at the New Testament and you really look at the earliest roles in the church, we see women, we see the earliest roles are the apostles, disciples, we see teachers, and we see deacons, and we see women in all of these roles in the early church. So if we think about how our churches are structured today, even though historically we call our leaders in the church different names, if we apply the standard of the Bible, which is women served in all of the roles in the earliest church, then there's no reason for women not to serve in those roles in our churches. So I do see a lot of hope in many churches. I do see a lot of embracement and people realizing that women are called to do these roles too. But I also see a lot of people digging in their heels and a lot of people holding the line and refusing to consider the idea that women might be called to these roles.
Turning to politics for a moment, evangelical Christians largely embraced former President Trump as president, although there were some Christians who opposed him. Why do you think that many Christians found him appealing as a leader?
Yes, I think, you know, Kristen Cobez Dume does a great job in Jesus and John Wayne in connecting the dots for us on how we got to Trump. And the fact is that evangelical Christianity emphasizes, manly men, I suppose, you know, this type of masculinity, which emphasizes these leaders that are that are to win at all costs. And these leaders are often misogynist. They are often, you know, women are contrasted as being weak, whereas men are strong. And so evangelicalism has a history in the 20th and early 21st century of emphasizing these type of manly leaders. And Trump, in many ways, is a natural manifest, you know, is the culmination of these teachings within evangelical Christianity.
What effect do you think that Trump had on the evangelical movement moving forward?
I think that there is a reckoning that is happening right now because many people realize that Trump actually does not represent what really our core Christian values. And the although it's not simply Trump, but we're also seeing the after effect within churches, like the Church Two movement. Mm-hmm. And people are realizing that something is wrong. And maybe it's a bad idea to combine our faith with politics.
Me Too, raising awareness of sexual harassment and violence, spreading to the religious community in recent years in the form, as you mentioned, of hashtag Church Too. And this is happening just about the time that you walked out of your church. What have you seen out of this movement?
I have seen women beginning to stand up. And because of the Me Too movement, women were able to find a voice. They were able to find journalists who would listen to them. They were able to find people who had similar experiences to them and begin to come together and say something is wrong. And this, I think, is what led to I think we've realized how these structures within churches that keep women out of the leadership table also keep women from being able to say when something is wrong. And so I think a lot of churches are beginning to realize that in order to keep predators out of churches, in order to keep them out of leadership roles, we have to allow the victims to have leadership positions, to be able to speak out and to recognize their voices. So I think it is helping to bring a constructive change within American Christianity.
So if equal gender rights were recognized and were advocated for by a majority of evangelical Christians, how do you see that altering and changing your faith? And what do you make it would happen to evangelical Christianity?
I think we would have a much better church. I think we would have, if we allowed women and men to use their gifts as God called them, instead of describing what we think women and men should do. I mean, that's essentially what we do with biblical manhood and womanhood. We say, this is what we think God is calling you to, and you have to stay within these boundaries. If we stop doing that and just let women and men use their gifts as God has given them, I mean, I can't even imagine what that would be like if we just allowed people to do what God called them to do. So I'm hopeful. I'm always a hopeful person. And so I would love a future where my daughter and my son could do what God has gifted them to do instead of trying to fit the box of what it means to be a Christian man or a Christian woman. And I just simply think that our churches would be much more effective. And I think the gospel of Christ, instead of being damaged, would actually be much more free to reach people and to spread the news of Jesus.
We only have a couple seconds left, but nearly 5 years after your husband was fired, do you feel like you're in a better place with your spirituality or at peace with where you are with the church?
Yes, I do. I've always been able to separate what people have done from what I believe in God. And all of the problems within the church are problems of people. And our God is always called, the Christian God has always reached out to help people. And so I think that my faith has never been hurt by what people have done within the church.
Beth, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Beth Allison Barr is an Associate Dean for Professional Development and a history professor at Baylor University, author of The Making of Biblical Womanhood. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.